This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, so LA is still big mad about Joe Kelly getting suspended for 8 games. All of a sudden, they love this guy in LA. They hated him last year because he wasn't good. He's wild. They gave him a lot of money. Boy, I looked just to see what he was going to be missing out on by being suspended 8 games. Seth, he makes over $8 million a year, Joe Kelly does. This, you know, just this wiry, wormy turd of a middle reliever makes $8 million a year. He's scheduled to make $12 million, I think, next year, or there's a $4 million buyout that they can get rid of him. That's where the rubber will meet the road. What I'm about to read to you is true about how the Dodgers and their fans and the media that covers that team feel this way about Joe Kelly, then Joe Kelly should have just cinched up his team option for next year for $12 million being picked up, because they are ready to canonize this man. They are ready to create a statue for him. They're ready to retire his number because he threw a foot over Alex Bregman's head the other night on a 3-0 count.
Joe Kelly said, I make $8 million a year, but those two pitches were on the house.
That's right. Yeah. Horribly cheesy line, yes.
Joe Kelly will get a support. You know what? Some clown Dodgers fan is going to put Joe Kelly in one of his movies. I don't know who it's going to be, but one of these, I don't know if it's – I don't want to say Seth Rogen because I like Seth Rogen. It'll be somebody. Somebody out there is going to put Joe Kelly in a movie, and it's going to sicken me.
Bradley Cooper, Adam Sandler, somebody like that.
I think Bradley Cooper's a Philadelphia fan.
Yeah. Sandler's a New York guy.
He's a New York guy. Yeah. That's the thing. I don't know how many guys out there are genuine Dodgers fans, because most of the truly talented ones are transplants.
Right. Yeah. So yesterday this column came out from Bill Plaschke, longtime award-winning columnist for the LA Times. And if I were a Dodger fan, I would be embarrassed by this. It's already a fan base that has a reputation of being soft. And I'm telling you, if this column is any reflection of how the Dodger fans feel, you should be embarrassed. And Seth, I've cherry-picked a few excerpts that I think are pretty good to react to here. This is how it starts off. Thank you, Joe Kelly. Thank you for banging hard on the trash can that is the Houston Astros. Thank you for making sure the Dodgers didn't get cheated again. Bless you, Joe Kelly, for a fearless, vengeful, and amazingly scoreless inning that will live forever in Dodgers lore. He not only stood up for a wronged clubhouse, he spoke for an aggrieved Dodger nation, and it was a sight to see. The Dodgers spent the first 5 innings carefully controlling their rage as their fans surely watched in frustration. Then Kelly stepped on the mound in the 6th and let it all out. On social media, some suggested he be given a Mookie Betts-type contract. Others suggested they build him a statue. Don't laugh. This was that big.
This is the most interesting part of it, is that people are acting like Joe Kelly stepped onto the mound planning on doing this, and then it wasn't Joe Kelly slowly unraveling because he was upset that he got an owie from getting tangled up with Michael Brantley at first, and then that Dusty Baker called him a little effer, and that then he lost control and he had pitched to a 3-0 count on Alex Bregman, and he just lost it. He just flat out lost it. But somehow it was like, no, Joe Kelly showed up with a badge, and he's going to be the one.
He's John
so
Wayne.
There's that. The notion that somehow Joe Kelly intended to do this from the get-go. And then there's that. The complete lack of shame by Dodgers fans and Bill Plaschke and allowing a guy that wasn't even on the 2017 Dodgers to come on and do your dirty work for you.
Yeah.
And for the life of me, I do not understand or get that. I don't understand how they're like, they're basically allowing themselves to become, they're, if anything, they're Joe Kelly's cucks because they're allowing him to come in and act like he's the one that's actually going to take care of business. A man who cheated, or at least who was on a team that cheated in 2018, and it was the Red Sox. It's not like it was just any team that Joe Kelly was on. It was the team that also undid the Dodgers. And, like, I've seen no talk about, like, Joe Kelly retribution or anything. Oh, and by the way, Mookie Betts is on your team.
Right.
Just a ridiculous amount of hypocrisy and idiocy coming out of that cesspool that is Southern California.
Can I give you another serving of Plaschke?
Please.
Okay,
please
here we
do.
Go. Here we
give
go.
Me some, Plaschke, who apparently is the most... He's got to be beloved by Dodgers fans, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
If there's one thing I look at Bill Plaschke and I think, oh, that is a sexy, dashing fella. And in a town like L.A., man, I bet he is just swimming in it.
By virtue of his newness, this is more Plaschke here, Kelly was always on the outside of that controversy. It obviously didn't matter. After a rough debut season in L.A. last summer, Kelly is a Dodger now. Kelly got back on the mound, all right. He walked Yuli Gurriel on four pitches that included one inside. Then he sailed his next pitch over Carlos Correa's head. Of all the lame... Okay, this is where Plaschke, I think, is factually incorrect.
Yeah.
Now, this is an opinion, but I think he's getting Correa and Altuve mixed up. He says, of all the lame apology attempts by the Astros in the wake of the sign-stealing scandal, Bregman's and Correa's were the worst. I would argue that Correa's was among the best because it was honest. It wasn't scripted. I think he means Altuve there.
But he also went after Bellinger though too. Correa in Plaschke's eyes had one of the worst apologies because Correa didn't just lay down and let everybody trample all over him. He stood up for Altuve.
Mm.
At the very least, you know what? At least Plaschke was paying attention beyond the press conference. A lot of national media, for the most part, has just completely ignored any of that genuine, heartfelt apologies or statements that players had after that press conference, and they act like the only guys that ever said anything at all were Altuve and Bregman.
More Plaschke. Baker actually sounded surprised somebody would make it difficult for his cheaters, saying this is the first time in this just-started season that they've seen such inside pitching. It was perhaps the first time anyone has seen those mocking baby faces coming from a grown pitcher as Kelly was staring down Correa. And what exactly was that all about? Kelly said, quote, I guess my expression was what I interpreted in my head, what he said. Correa was whining. This is Plaschke now. Correa was whining. Good for Kelly. The Astros spent the entire winter whining. Good for Kelly. Did he not watch Cody Bellinger sit there and ramble on and on for minutes on end about how
we had this, the
ring was taken away from us. Everybody in the show doesn't respect them. Like the Bellinger calls it the show is just makes me want to punch him in the face. Oh my God.
Sucks that he's so good.
Yeah.
That's the most annoying part
suck.
Of Bellinger.
It does yeah. suck. The Astros are getting, more Plaschke, the Astros are getting off the hook during the shortened season because there will be no fans to boo and jeer and bang trash cans at them. They will not play in front of a Southern California crowd that was ready to unload its deep and abiding rage on the team that pilfered what would have been the Dodgers' first World Series title in 29 years. The Astros almost could be lulled this summer into thinking everyone is going to forget. Thank you, Joe Kelly.
I think that, I was just thinking, Dave Roberts has got to be the happiest about this entire scandal because the Dodgers couldn't do it for 2 years in a row, and the Astros weren't doing the trash can banging when they played the Dodgers, and the Dodgers let that fall from their hands. Their grip, really just a shameful display of, I don't even want to say professionalism. This might be one of the least ethical things I've ever seen out of a journalist. And this is a guy that's been awarded by the Associated Press as Sports Columnist of the Year. This is a man who's going on in his column. He's thanking one of the athletes he covers for throwing at the heads of two of the other athletes that he covers. Like, this is what Bill Plaschke just did. That's the example he's setting. So young journalists out there, aspiring sports writers, apparently that's what gets it done in sports media. Go ahead and actually thank players for throwing at the heads of other players over something that happened several years ago.
Yeah, it's a cowardly column because, as you pointed out earlier, Seth, I think it's a great point. If that pitch is 6 inches lower, it hits Alex Bregman in the head. And to me, the especially when it's Joe Kelly, who is not a he's not a pinpoint control guy. He's among the pitchers I would trust the least when it comes to, okay, just send a message to him. Don't hit him in the head, but just throw it near his head. Joe Kelly, it's dangerous enough with Joe Kelly throwing a pitch that him throwing it near Alex Bregman's head may as well be the same thing as him hitting Alex Bregman in the head in terms of just how egregious it is, because he very easily could have. And so would Plaschke write the same column if Bregman were down writhing in pain with a bloody skull because he just got beamed in the head by Joe Kelly?
Well, yeah.
There's no chance he writes that column.
Plaschke wrote a really nice article in the late 80s about Dickie Thon, who, you know,
really?
Was never quite the same after he got hit in the face and when he was here with the Houston Astros.
Yeah,
yeah, I was just going through looking to see what else has Plaschke written about beaning through the years. He certainly didn't seem to think that, you know, hey, Dickie Thon got beaned in the face. That's all right because it's a man's game. Like, it was kind of a bad deal, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it basically ended Dickie Thon's career, more or less. Yeah, that's...
I think he ended up playing, actually.
Yeah, no, that's why I say more or less.
Like,
he was an all-star when he got beamed in the eye. He was never an all-star again. Yeah. The Yankees and the Dodgers are right now the odds-on World Series favorites. Do the events of the last 2 days, though, between the Dodgers and the Astros, have the networks rooting for maybe something else to happen? Seth and I will talk about that next.
You know, I thought the apologies were whatever. I thought Jim Crane's was weak. I thought Manfred's punishment was weak, giving him immunity. I mean, these guys were cheating for 3 years. You know, I think what people don't realize is Altuve stole an MVP from Judge in 17. Everyone knows they stole the ring from us. But, you know, it's over. They apologized. They went together and apologized. And, you know, it is what it is now.
According to Bill Plaschke, the Astros were the ones doing the whining this offseason. Last I checked, The Astros are pretty much zipped lips this offseason until they were made to apologize by Major League Baseball, until Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve looked like they were being held at gunpoint to apologize at that press conference. The Astros didn't really say much of anything this offseason. It was the Dodgers, and that's Cody Bellinger back in February doing most of the whining last night.
They were cheating for 3 years. I don't know why he didn't punish them, even though, if I'd paid attention before 10 minutes ago, I'd know that he couldn't punish them.
Right.
But also that in the report, he based the punishment on the several months that they were cheating. But it was 3 years. Bellinger can't even hit 400 for an entire season.
What a
clown. Why don't you finish something for once in your life, Bellinger, instead of whining about having I'll tell you this, Cody Bellinger, you got to stop playing the victim. You got to stop blaming others for your failures in the World Series and your poor playoff performances. It's never going to work out for you until you stop doing that. And so, until you stop claiming that bogeymen stole your championship, until you guys just actually put it on yourselves to actually do something about it, the Red Sox and the Astros of this world will continue to beat you into the turf.
Did you just call them bogeymen?
Yeah.
They're boogeymen. They're not bogeymen.
No, bogeyman is something different.
Oh, it is? Okay. I got
think
you.
So.
Okay.
I don't know. No.
I'll let you do that research.
There's a boogeyman. No, there is. A bogeyman is an imaginary evil spirit or being used to frighten children.
Bogeyman. Then what's a boogeyman?
That's saying, like, some like people that couldn't say bogeyman.
You're the first person I've ever heard say bogeyman. Everybody says boogeyman.
There's actually two different pronunciations.
You can
pronounce it. I'm looking at it right now. Boogeyman or bogeyman.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
All right.
I like bogeyman. It sounds more evil. Boogeyman can kind of almost like it reminds me too much of like stupid disco culture.
Yeah, like, or like a Muppet or something.
I feel like boogie. Yeah.
I feel like there would be like a playful Muppet on Sesame Street named the Boogeyman. Like, hey, and he smiles and he has googly eyes. So
it's spelled B-O-G-E-Y-M-A-N.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Seth, there's been a lot of drama the last couple nights between the Astros and the Dodgers. Not sure if you've noticed, but I wonder if, and this would be an easier sell to the networks maybe if Justin Verlander were for sure going to be around in the postseason, because the Astros getting to the World Series got a whole lot dicier with the news that Verlander is probably going to be out for the season. That said, the Astros, I think, are still going to win their division. They're going to make the postseason, and who knows? In the postseason, maybe they make a run. Does the drama between the Astros and the Dodgers make that the most attractive World Series matchup?
Maybe from a ratings standpoint, it might. But actually, then, first off, I think just standard from year to year, from a ratings perspective, I don't think you can do worse than just the big blue blood franchises
sure.
playing each other. So Red Sox versus Dodgers, Yankees versus Dodgers. As far as the bad blood between the Astros and the Dodgers, the overwhelming feeling I've been having the last 48 hours, Sean, is this is not the healing feeling that I wanted to have out of sports returning. Like, remember sports was going to return,
yeah.
and it was going to be a return to some kind of normalcy,
right.
and we'll heal. It felt like the exact opposite. This felt like opening up old wounds, and I would say whether you're a Dodgers fan, an Astros fan, whatever it might be, like, it's not, nobody ever thinks, nobody, that's why they say revenge is a dish best served cold. I'm going to confess to you, I don't know what that means.
I don't know.
But as far as, like, actually, do you ever actually feel better for having avenged something? No, not really. And do the Dodgers really think that? I don't think the Dodgers in their heart of hearts feel like now they've avenged losing the 2017 World Series, even though they should stop blaming others for their misfortune.
Did you just listen to me reading Bill Plaschke's column in the previous segment?
Yeah, but that's Plaschke. He's a sports columnist.
That's true. You
know, he's a clown. It's okay. Like, as far as it goes to rank and file Dodgers fans
sure.
who don't look, rank and file Dodgers fans have to get up and go to work today. They don't get to write 500 trashy words and then get paid $400,000 a year to do it several times a week. Okay, that's Bill Plaschke's world.
Yep.
He can sit and act like a couple of guys almost getting hit is somehow bad. So I think that this was not the healing feeling that I wanted or anticipated right now. Now that they've played the Dodgers, I feel like we can move on from this. I don't think there's going to be as much bated breath over whether or not the Astros get hit by a pitch. There's still going to be every time an Astros player gets hit, there's still going to be a whole bunch of rejoicing by various trolls on the internet. But I feel like it's kind of, you got over that first hurdle, and then you get back to normal in some respects.
I don't know, man. I feel like if these two teams met in the World Series, there would be some serious sauce on that World Series. You know what I mean? And you're right that New York. I'm putting Boston aside because I don't think they're a World Series contender this year. But New York and LA. I mean, the Dodgers and the Yankees are the two clear front runners, and they are the two biggest markets in two of the biggest blue blood franchises in the entire sport. So conventional wisdom says that's what baseball is rooting for, and maybe they still are, just based sheerly on the size of the city. Like, we'd rather have the 10 million people living in New York and the millions and millions across the country that wear Yankee hats as if they've lived in New York their entire lives, but they're front runners. We'd just rather have the sheer numbers of all them. Purely from a storyline standpoint, though, there's nothing between the Yankees and the Dodgers, this version of them. It's not like they've met recently in the World Series or anything like that. Way back in the day, they did a few times, but there's nothing between those two teams right now that even comes close to resembling what these two teams, the Astros and the Dodgers, feel about each other. Seth, that Joe Kelly thing was water cooler talk everywhere yesterday.
Right,
and
right.
Those feelings are not going away anytime soon.
Bad blood is good for it. Frankly, I just don't like living through it anymore. I've just wanted to wipe the slate clean for a long time, but whatever.
Ain't happening, buddy.
It's not going to happen, especially because this is what would be the fun part. If the Astros were to meet the Dodgers in the World Series, I would feel ecstatic about that just because I know the Astros would win that series. The Dodgers can't get it done.
Yeah.
As long as all of those guys continue to lean on Joe Kelly to be their lord and savior of the baseball world. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? They're not mentally tough enough to overcome the residual effect of trash can banging. Oh my gosh, they cheated us out of it. Oh, how did they do it? They banged on garbage cans several months ago. Oh, okay, wait, like Could only they hear it? No, the entire stadium could hear it. But it was awful. It was dastardly. They relied on high technology. Yeah. Wait, the video room that you guys have access to? No, the trash cans. Come on, get over yourselves, dumbasses. Like, honestly, and then every nerd that does a study about this says that it basically shows that there was a negligible effect and, if anything, possibly a detrimental effect on the Astros. Whether the Astros were morally correct or not, yes, you've got a case there. The Astros should not have cheated, as all those other teams that cheated should not have cheated. But to think that the reason you lost the series was because of the cheating that was done in July, August, and September, that's frankly you just making excuses. Yeah. And until you stop making excuses for yourselves, LA Dodgers, you'll never achieve the ultimate success, at least not in this decade or the previous one. You have to let it go at some point.
You're illustrating my point about the potential of a World Series between these two teams, because the hate, the vitriol, the frustration, the disappointment, whatever negative term it is you want to come up with how one fan base feels about the other team is, I think, Seth, I think the volume is cranked up to 10 on both sides. I think you represent the view of a lot of Astro fans towards the Dodgers. And I think Cody Bellinger and Bill Plaschke and some of the trolls on Twitter represent a lot of what the Dodgers and probably baseball at large feel about the Houston Astros. As far as Joe Kelly goes, look, I think Joe Kelly is a worm. I think Joe Kelly is a plague. I think he deserves every inning of the suspension that he got. That said, baseball of the major sports could probably use a few more Joe Kellys. You know what I mean? Just in terms of getting people interested, having villains. Baseball doesn't have villains. You know, the Astros, that was one of the things that was actually good for baseball. People are probably watching Astro games now that wouldn't have watched them before. The average fan, maybe even people who weren't watching baseball at all, will watch an Astros game now just for somebody to root against. And I think Joe Kelly is one of those guys. He's a worm, don't get me wrong. He's a total weasel. But sometimes you need characters like that to get people more engaged in the game.
One of our listeners says, no matter how big a fan, it's hard to watch them and not think they are cheaters or somewhat fraudulent.
Yeah,
no matter how bad, don't want to think that or a fan. No free agents will come here now either because of the stigma. This thing is going to drop off quick, hopefully dead wrong. I think that's like a genuine heartfelt sentiment that a lot of people have. You know, you get out and you talk to some people that are conflicted about all this. If I have to help you rationalize like how you feel about the Astros right now, I would say this. First, like, you know the rule, man. Those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Like, we're all sinners in some respect. Not a single damn one of us is a pure human being. We all make mistakes. We all do bad things at times, and then we try to make up for it. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. So did the Astros cheat in 2017? Yes. Are they bad people because of it? Okay, well, no, they're just not perfect human beings because of it. The second thing is, if you and this is important for you to remember, I'm not excusing anything, but I will say, in that environment in 2017, there was a perception, and I think a deserved perception, by the Astros and many other teams in the league that all these other teams were doing something and that they were using electronics and figuring out ways to relay it to the batter. And various teams tried various tactics. The Astros were very aggressive in doing it. And I think, if anything, they were victims of their own non-cheating success more than anything. If this had just happened in 2017 and early 2018, and then the Astros had fallen off in 2018 and 2019, we never would have heard anything about this. The problem was that by 2019, because the Astros were as good as they ever were, people around baseball were convinced that they had to be doing it. No, it's got to be something even more now. It's got to be buzzers. They can't possibly be this good. I'm telling you, they were just this good in 2019.
Yeah.
So don't think that. I mean, what I would say to the texture is, go ahead and abandon baseball altogether, because that was just kind of the environment. Did you abandon baseball after a bunch of guys used steroids because they were trying to keep up with the arms race of using steroids? No, you didn't. You just moved on. And that's kind of what the electronic sign-stealing era will be viewed as several years from now. Wow, a bunch of people were trying to get an edge, and they felt like they had to keep up with the competition.
Good advice from Seth Payne right there for the texter. When it comes to making sure their season stays up and running, I guess. The NBA is killing it right now. We've got the latest numbers for you next. Seth, this from the NBA yesterday. This is July 29th, 2020. Of the 344 players tested for COVID-19
Let me guess.
Campus since test results were last announced on July 20th, how many of the 344 have returned confirmed positive COVID-19 tests?
This is what I'm, because look, if everybody had remained in the bubble, I would have said zero in a heartbeat. But I'm wondering if there might have been one or two who were released. You know, like Austin Rivers got to go out for a family emergency. I say
Zion.
Got to. Like he had to go out for a family emergency.
Sure.
I'm gonna say that even all of those guys were careful when they were out. They were mindful of social distancing and whatnot. They came back and we've seen zero test results positive.
The correct answer, yes, my friends, is zero. Zero have returned confirmed positive tests. Yes, 300 out of 344. And then the NBA simply says the 2019-2020 NBA season resumes on Thursday as the Pelicans meet the Jazz and the Lakers meet the Clippers on TNT.
Oh boy. The bubbles so far, knock on wood, have worked spectacularly well. With MLS, with women's soccer, with basketball so far.
Hockey,
right. It's worked really, really well. It's not ideal, obviously. There are no fans in the but of course there are no fans in baseball.
Yeah, nor would there be, yeah.
The problem is that it's worked really, really well in baseball, except for those bastards down in Miami. If it weren't for the Marlins, then you'd be looking at the baseball. Like, honestly, the baseball experiment has blown me away. I did not anticipate having such success on 29 teams. And it's a shame that, obviously, for multiple reasons, the Marlins is such a mess as it is. But it's really, like, I would have anticipated. I thought we'd have at least two or three or more Marlins-type situations where you had multiple players on a team, especially once you started playing. So this so far is a pretty good sign of things to come. Football, obviously, has much greater challenges than baseball when it comes to proximity and how close the players are to each other.
Yeah, and it's got the same challenge that baseball has, that guys are going to leave the building at some point.
But
there is no
bubble. And with more numbers, you have larger numbers of guys that could potentially leave the building. But I think that's the most encouraging part, Sean, because, okay, the nature of the sport with football is going to be dicier than the nature of the sport with baseball. Baseball, you're by design, you've already socially distanced. There's no better social distancing than playing outfield on a baseball team. Football is different, but I think the thing to remember, baseball has had 30 little modified quasi-bubbles in all their different markets. And so far, in 29 of those 30 little mini-bubbles, guys have been going home at night. Guys have been presumably getting takeout or having food delivered or having whomever, like people in their household have had varying levels of adherence to the rules, and it's gone really well for 29 of them. Because the football bubble, look, if one person in the football bubble has the COVID, then yeah, I would imagine there's a larger chance of it becoming a hotspot than there would be in baseball. But in baseball, they've done a pretty good job of just keeping the COVID out of the clubhouse. And I think it gives me hope that football might be able to do that too. If you keep all the COVID out of the clubhouse, then your chances are pretty damn good that nobody's going to be transmitting it to each other.
Yeah, I don't know the specific things that baseball has been doing. Like, I don't know the specific things the Astros have been doing to make their facility different than it would be during a normal season, other than the media is not allowed in the clubhouse, there's no fans in the building, all those things that we see, you know, we see those things on TV. I'm talking about behind the scenes in the, you know, is the clubhouse the same, or do they do every other locker instead of every locker now? Do they go and they, you know, are the showers set up differently? Football, we know, especially with the Texans, I mean, hell, they put a press release out about it the other day with about 15 bullet points of different things that they're doing inside the building in football to be completely hyper-vigilant against this thing. And I guess that's one of my biggest disappointments in baseball so far is that, and this isn't a Marlin, like the Marlins appears to be just jackassery off the page compared to the other 29 teams. But I've watched other games. I've watched the Astros. the things that they've been saying they were going to do inside the stadium on game day, they're not doing them. I mean, the guys are in the club. They're in the dugout sitting with each other. They're dapping each other up. They're giving high fives after the end. I know sometimes they're giving air high fives or whatever, but there's still fist bumping going on and things like that. And I'm not a the sky is falling COVID kind of person, but I just want baseball to stick around. Right. You know what I mean? Well, like I want the percentages minimized.
I thought it was better. I thought I noticed more mindfulness of it last night.
Okay.
And I think that's the shot in the arm, or I guess the fear factor is going to be higher after what happened with the Marlins. I don't know. And that's the big question. Okay, so far, guys have been really good about not contracting it away from the facility. So because of that, they've gotten away with perhaps not being mindful of it within the facility. And I guess you just have to keep impressing upon them, look, all it takes is one guy to come into the clubhouse, and if we're not paying attention, you know, with the Marlins, at least one of the things that happened was there was a rain delay, and everybody just crammed into the dugout all of a sudden with nowhere to go. So who knows if that had something to do with it, or various other times when everybody was packed in together like they were at a rave, like a college kid or something. It's all it takes is that one. So that's going to be the hardest part, is the longer it goes where things are going well and guys are being careful away from the facility, that's when guys get sloppy and all of a sudden things fall apart.
Kudos to the NBA for doing as good a job as they're doing inside the bubble. No positive tests among 344 that have been taken. This is the first. July 20th is the test date that we're talking about here. Zero for 344 when it comes to positive tests. Nice job, NBA. MLB is adding a monitor, like a person to go on the road with teams to help adhere to some of the COVID protocols that teams are putting in place. Seth, when Wade was in for you the other day, one of the things I asked him was about policing teammates in the NFL, right? Yeah. There's going to be 80 guys in these locker rooms. Eventually, there'll be 53 plus a practice squad. There's going to be about 70 guys in there. So just the sheer numbers make it harder to police internally than the other sports. And what Wade says, I'm curious your thoughts on this, is he said it would probably be done by position group. You know, I brought up the team he was on in 2011 and 2012. There was, you know, maybe the best Texans team in the history of the franchise. And I said that was a group that was a veteran group, a lot of really high character guys. But then, I mean, God bless him, we love him. But, you know, if there was a player who was going to go down to a bar somewhere, a club, and eat chicken wings, it would have been Jacoby Jones.
Yeah.
You know, like and Jacoby Jones could have been the weakest link in that locker room if there was a coronavirus in 2011. And he said, well, that's when, you know, that would have been Andre's deal. Like, Andre would have been the one who would be responsible for Jacoby Jones because he is the leader in the wide receiver room. He said that's how it would probably be done. It'd probably be done by position group. Do you agree with him?
Yeah, I think so. And, it varies from team to team, because I was in 10 different years, I was on 10 different teams in the NFL, and each one of them was a little bit different. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter who the coach is. And it's one of those things you can't quite plan out. It's that sometimes you try to force a guy to be a leader or encourage a guy to be a leader, and he's not a natural leader. It doesn't work out. Or even in that, like within a position group, sometimes a guy's an effective leader. The next year you got more jackasses and he's not an effective leader. But that's generally the way it works, is like even in the locker room, you kind of, at least teams I was on, we always tried to be sure that the rookies were responsible for cleaning up their position group area. Mm-hmm. So because you don't want to, like, as a veteran player, you don't want the coach to walk through and all of a sudden your area is an absolute mess. Yep. You know, so you make sure the rookies are cleaning up all the tape and everything.
Not when coach is Coughlin.
Yeah. That's
for sure.
Or Capers. You know, Capers is a pretty fastidious dude.
Yeah.
The two of those guys had a lot of traits in common.
Yeah.
Dom Capers was like a very nice version of Tom Coughlin.
There you go.
But just both hyper-driven.
Yeah.
That's generally what you hope for. You know, the thing about the Texans defensive line meeting room, for a long time, going back to when JJ first got there, you had Sean Cody and, you know, Connor Barwin. Those guys weren't even that old, but you kind of looked at them as veteran guys.
Oh, you had the Ninja.
Antonio Smith would be the elder guy there. And then Vince Wilfork came,
mm-hmm.
and Vince Wilfork was the guy that kind of just makes sure everybody's doing the right thing. You got to tell, sometimes the young guys, they're being jackasses just because they don't know any better. You know, they're young,
yeah.
And you got to kind of educate them the way a father or an uncle or an aunt or anybody might educate them. And then after Vince Wilfork was gone, JJ became that guy. And JJ now presumably will be the guy telling the rookies, whether it's Blacklock or Gennard or anybody else. Like, hey, all right, listen, buddy, you guys got to – you're letting the team down if you decide to go out on a Friday night or something. You're screwing all of us. You're messing with our paychecks, and don't do it. I don't know how much – there used to be old school – there used to be kind of old school punishments doled out, Sean, and I'm not talking about like just overly over the top stuff or anything. But rookies used to be more treated like rookies because you didn't depend on them to play as much, and they kind of you went through like a hazing process. Yeah. There is one of the most effective things you can do to a player, and I never would have believed it until I saw it play out in person. Is you ostracize a player, like you cut them off. So there was this one kid, Aaron. I'll just call him Aaron K. He was an offensive lineman when I was with the Jaguars, and he would, whenever he got called out by a coach in a meeting, he would basically blame the guy next to him or say the guy didn't give him a call or something. Like really, the offensive linemen are supposed to stick together, you know? And he would always sell somebody out or make an excuse for it. And they gave him a couple of warnings, the veteran guys did in the room. And finally, they just said, all right, you're cut off. You're blackballed for 2 weeks. Like, nobody was to talk to him. Nobody was to acknowledge him. Nobody was to even act like he was a human being who was around. And I saw this kid over the course of 2 weeks, like, almost become a complete emotional train wreck.
Yeah.
Because it's a powerful thing to be just completely walled off like that. And I don't think they even made it the full 2 weeks because Bocelli felt bad for him. But that's the kind of stuff you can do. You're like, you just, it's a very powerful, social ties are very powerful. And if you just create an environment where it's not acceptable and it's not tolerated, then I think they can get pretty good adherence to it.
So the leaders in each of these position groups with the Texans, if we rapid fired these, I think some of them are pretty obvious. Like, we'll call these the COVID capos of the team. They're like the mob capos, you know, that are, you know, if Bill O'Brien is the boss and Anthony Weaver and Tim Kelly are the underbosses, who are the captains, you know, the capos of the different position group rooms? Deshaun with the quarterbacks, obviously. Running backs, probably David Johnson, I would guess.
I guess so, yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. He's got to run better than he has the last 3 years, but he's
the veteran.
He is the older guy, yeah.
Although Duke may be older than David Johnson, they may be about the same age. I don't know. So,
neither of them. Well, Duke's older than you expect, and David's younger than you expect.
Yeah. So maybe Duke. I don't know. Randall Cobb probably in the wide receiver room, you would think.
That makes sense. Cooks is Cooks is up there too. Yeah. And Kenny Still, those guys are all bona fide veterans. And none of them are old wide receivers yet, but they're getting up there. They've been in the league a long time.
Cobb's social style strikes me the most as somebody who would be the, hey, we can't go out and get the COVID kind of deal. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
he's kind of been very outspoken through this whole pandemic. Tight end, gotta be Darren Fells. Offensive line, Nick Martin, obviously.
Darren Fells, not only because of his chronological age, but just because he's a man of the he's well-traveled.
He is, you know? Well-traveled.
He's had multiple different careers in different industries.
Yeah.
He's worked internationally, yeah.
I would say Nick Martin, but do we respect him even though he steals gym equipment on a regular basis?
Well, no, it can't be Nick Martin, can it?
In the offensive line room?
They got. I'll tell you what, this is I'm not being snarky here. I'm just saying because he's young. But yeah, everybody's young, and like that's a good sign. But I would say Zach Fulton should be.
Yeah, that's true.
He's not the best player, but he's the old guy in the room. What was a weakness last year, I think, which was that they don't have any true, genuine, like stud older veteran guys, like if Dwayne Brown were still there. But they're gelling into a pretty competitive unit.
Yeah.
And they're getting up there between Nick Martin and Laremy Tunsil. I would have to say at this point, all right, I'll give it to Laremy Tunsil just because the checkbook wins ultimately.
There you go. All right, so yeah. J.J. Watt, defensive line. Linebacking room, is it Whitney or is it Benardrick McKinney?
Oh, that's tough because the inside linebackers and outside linebackers are whole different beasts.
Oh, are they? Okay. Well,
yeah.
then they each run their own room.
Yeah.
Run their own room. And then
at various times the Texans have – they've changed those rooms up a little bit, but now I think the linebackers are all together. So between Benardrick and Whitney, I guess it would be Whitney, but Benardrick's the signal caller, so yeah. They both have that some duty there.
Secondary, I guess, well, safeties would be Justin Reed for sure. Cornerbacks, I guess Bradley Roby? I don't know. I'm not sure who in the cornerback room. And then specialist, John
Reed.
You
know Reeds. What? You stumbled onto something there because there are concerns in the secondary, obviously, but I think also – from a leadership standpoint, they're in a weird spot because O'Brien is traded away for all these guys that I say trade away. He's made some pretty reasonable trades, I think, for guys that are disappointing first round talents.
Yeah.
They were disappointments with the team that they were with. Are they disappointments because they weren't stand up guys? Are they disappointments just because of bad luck? It's hard for guys like that to necessarily step up and be your leaders if they haven't established that they're rock solid as football players themselves.
We oddly enough, Seth, this might be where we feel the absence of Jonathan Joseph, right?
You know,
that room needs a guy to police these guys. I'm not saying Roby and Hargraves and these guys and Conley are running out doing bad things, but this is an offseason where you might kind of miss that leadership a little bit.
It might be really, really good for Bradley Roby and some of these guys that are at least, you know, vested veterans by now, to be thrust into that role. If Roby has that responsibility of feeling, you know, sometimes guys rise to the challenge.
Yeah.
And sometimes they become much more consistent and much more mature just because they have to be, because that's the role that they've been given. So we'll see which one of those guys kind of emerge.
All right, let's do some headlines, Ben.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Last night, Minute Maid Park, the Dodgers sweep a two-game set from the Astros. They win 4-2 in extra innings. The longest game of the 2020 season so far took place last night at Minute Maid Park. We had a chance to test drive the new extra inning rules as the Astros and the Dodgers each began innings 10 through 13 with a runner on second base. And I would say, Seth, from the standpoint of the game itself, the big takeaway for a lot of folks, criticism of Dusty Baker and his handling of things on the offensive side of things when the Astros were at the plate, that he didn't use more bunting, didn't use any, to move that runner over from second to get him into scoring position any of the three times they had a chance to take a lead in the game.
Yeah, and it's funny, and I guess it's ironic because the concern with Dusty Baker was like, he's too old school. But now we get into a situation where he's using the analytics and saying, let's just keep swinging away. Those are our best chances. And people are upset that he didn't go too old school with it. I would also say this, Sean. If this runner starting on second base is supposed to quicken the extra innings process, I don't think you got the desired effect last night. So I feel doubly dirty because I had this whole gimmicky charade going on with a guy starting on second base, and yet it still goes 13 innings.
This was the first time it's gone beyond the 11th inning so far this season in baseball. I think it's up until last night it's had the desired effect, which is it's ended things within an inning or two. I think the other thing that happened in extra innings, Seth, that had a lot of people talking was the Astros had runners on first and second, nobody out. The Dodgers induce a ground ball to third base. Kiki Hernandez, the second baseman, catches the ball on, at least it was called a catch on a fielder's choice, which would have left first and third with one out with George Springer coming to the plate. Instead, and it looked like on the replay, he dropped the ball on the exchange.
Yeah.
And I think the umpires botched it. It should have been bases loaded, one out. Instead, it was first and third with two outs. It should have been bases loaded with one out. And the Astros, instead, George Springer strikes out. The inning is over. Instead of, you know, the Astros would have been in a situation where, man, if George Springer just puts the bat on the ball somewhere, doesn't ground into a double play, they may win the game.
And that was reviewed in New York. And I'm not putting anything past Major League Baseball at this point. Conspiracy theories, you got them? I'll smoke them. Because, look, Manfred's just a mess and a disaster of a commissioner. They've lost my trust, Major League Baseball.
Okay.
And I don't know how you're going to move on if Seth Payne doesn't trust you.
Okay. Well, let me serve you up a little something that will hopefully restore some of your trust. What do you think of Joe Kelly getting an 8-game suspension for throwing at Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa?
I think that Joe Kelly was already suspended a couple years ago, 6 games, for throwing at a batter. So if it had been anything less than 8 games, I would have actually been surprised. I say go screw yourselves, anybody that thinks that somehow Joe Kelly deserved a vigilante's pass. That somehow they don't think Manfred is enforcing the code of law strictly enough. So the answer to that is to somehow let Joe Kelly be a vigilante with no comeuppance for it. Go screw yourselves. And quit whining about losing your world. Listen, Dodgers. Did the Astros cheat in 2017? Yes, of course. They've admitted to it. They've apologized for it. But that's not why they won the World Series, you know? Yeah, just quit making these excuses for why you lost that series. because it wasn't going on in the World Series to the degree that you thought it was. You just lost that series. And you'll never get anything in this life. Okay? Okay, Dodgers? I'm trying to help you out
Seth
here.
Is, just
until
so
you stop
know,
focusing so much on Houston.
So people know, because I can see Seth right now, he's wagging his finger.
Yeah.
You're wagging your finger at the Dodgers. You're almost like a disappointed parent with them right now.
Yeah, frankly, I'm disappointed that they won't be accountable for their own actions.
Yeah.
But at some point, you got to step up and come up big in the most crucial moments. You know, you guys have let Dave Roberts off the hook for however many times now because you don't have the intestinal fortitude to make the tough decisions and do what it takes to win a championship the way the Astros do.
You know,
it's a shame. It's pathetic, is what it is.
You know who's not remorseful at all? Joe Kelly, who put this up on Instagram. He put up a picture on Instagram, Graham, of him holding presumably his three children, but he photoshopped faces of Bregman, Correa, and Altuve onto the picture. Hey guys, with the suspension I received from Major League Baseball for my actions on Tuesday, I'd like to apologize to absolutely nobody. The Astros are hiding in their dugouts because I'm suspended. Just wait till I get out. And then he just fires off a barrage of hashtags, the likes of which I've never seen before, including hashtag Correa sucks, hashtag Altuve sucks, hashtag Bregman sucks. I got to see if this is a real account. Let me look here. It's got 70. He had 43,000 followers last night. He's got 77,800 followers now. Got to be a real Joe Kelly. Now, he does not have a blue check mark, Seth.
Yeah.
But he's got 77,000 followers.
Major League Baseball probably suspended it. So what, I don't quite understand. Maybe I'm dense. Well, I mean, I know I'm dense, but I don't know if that's what's being the obstacle here. What does he mean by saying the Astros are hiding
no
in
idea.
Their dugouts waiting until I'm
no
done?
No clue.
If there's one thing I've learned from all of this, these guys... not good trash talkers.
Not good at insults.
Not good trash talkers at all, no.
Not good at insults, no.
He made a baby face, and somehow that's turned into like, oh my gosh, he made a baby face. Yeah. Oh.
We got a text message here, Seth. I feel like you would have a take on this.
Okay.
If you could only punch one guy in the face, are you taking Joe Kelly or Trevor Bauer? You only have one swing to use.
Joe Kelly, I think that Trevor Bauer, I wouldn't be surprised if he actually has kind of a genuine... obstacle, I guess. You know, like I think Trevor Bauer's just wired a little bit differently. Whereas Joe Kelly, I think, just chooses to be a D-bag.
Yeah.
That's kind of it. I think he's proud of it. I think he's just I would say Joe Kelly.
Right. Trevor Bauer's not happy with Major League Baseball player or owners with their act during the negotiation either. I gained a sliver of respect for him during that he was like, this is a joke that we can't come to an agreement to play baseball. I did like that.
You know what? I guess I don't want to be one of these. I don't want to speak out of turn on all of this. I would say this, like independent of Trevor Bauer, I would say this. In my life, I've had experience with different people that are, you know, to varying degrees on the spectrum.
Yeah.
And you just kind of learn, like, okay, this comes with the territory, and this is kind of this is the spectrum speaking versus this is the actual person, and try to look at. People with a little bit more empathy when it comes to stuff like that.
Kelly seems like a genuine a-hole. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's difference. Sometimes an a-hole is just an a-hole.
Yeah, and that's what
you know?
Kelly is. Yeah.
It's not, sometimes it doesn't have to be a disorder or anything. You're just an ass. Yeah.
So Jadeveon Clowney is still out there as we move to the next headline. He's still trying to find a team willing to bring him onto their roster this offseason. Over 4 months into becoming an unrestricted free agent, this has been one of the craziest journeys for any player that I can think of. The Jadeveon Clowney free agency journey. His market has never really materialized to the degree that he originally anticipated. Meanwhile, the market has continued to boom for defensive players. Miles Garrett getting $25 million a year. Joey Bosa just 2 days ago getting $27 million a year.
Joey Bosa. This is done as the cap is contracting.
Right.
And nobody knows exactly what it's going to look like next year.
And yet, here's Jadeveon Clowney, just named the 41st best player in football by his peers in the top 100 this week. So it's a really interesting paradox going on. Here's the stage Clowney is at right now in his free agency. Earlier this offseason, it was reported that the Jets might have some interest in Clowney. The interest was lukewarm. Nevertheless, his former teammate, Bradley McDougald, is now in there as a safety. He was part of the Jamal Adams trade, Seth. Mm-hmm. In a post to his Twitter account, McDougald said he spoke with Clowney, and the free agent defensive end prodded McDougald to tell the Jets to, quote, come and get him. So, Seth, here's my question. Jadeveon Clowney was one of the rising stars in football a couple years ago. It was thought that he might be in line to get the contract that he thought he was going to get. That was a legitimate talking point. And now he's at the stage where he is kind of quasi-begging the Jets to, quote, come and get him. Is this the equivalent of an Academy Award-winning actress maybe falling out of favor in Hollywood, and then 3 or 4 years later, yada, 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 they're making phone calls to their agent to try to get into some softcore porn?
Are the Jets Cinemax, is what I'm saying.
Even without the
porn thing, I think, like, because usually it's hard to make that transition. Usually it's like, okay, try to do the porn to get into Hollywood.
I'm a lover, man.
Yeah, I think it's more like you're doing the infomercials or something.
There you go.
You know, like when all of a sudden you saw Sally Struthers doing infomercials? Or no, not Sally
she was,
Struthers.
No, she was doing the starving kids.
Yeah, but that's different. That's like, yeah. That's an honorable pursuit. Right. I'm thinking of, what's her name with the thigh master? Chrissy from Three's Company.
Suzanne Summers.
Yeah. Now, I bet she made a lot of money. Yeah, I think she made a lot of money on that. That's one of those things where you first see it and you're like, oh, poor Chrissy. And then you realize, oh, she's got a share of ownership or something.
Right.
I think that perhaps it's a little bit like that. I think that, if anything, I would say, man, if there's any advice I could give to kids, it's never all about just the talent or even the production on the field necessarily. It's never completely about that unless you are like a supreme, genuine superstar, unless you're the 0.00001%. There's always at least a little bit of how well do you get along with others and like how well do you get along with your boss. And sometimes maybe it's a few little things go a long way. Just being a good employee goes a long, long way sometimes, more than you might expect.
That is good advice. Next headline, college football. They're starting to make some decisions, Seth, in these conferences that have not announced plans to play just a conference schedule or their entire schedule. We know that in the Power 5, the ACC, SEC, and Big 12, it all kind of pushed things off to the end of July. Well, the ACC powers that be met yesterday, and they announced that if there is a season, they announced what they're calling a 10-plus-1 schedule, where the ACC is going to play a 10-game conference schedule, and then each team will get to choose one non-conference opponent to play under the condition that they play that non-conference opponent in the stadium of the ACC team. A big wrinkle in this whole thing is Notre Dame. Notre Dame, who is a member of the ACC for all sports except for football, and in football plays a 5 or 6 game slate of ACC games every year. They're sort of a, you know, kind of a stepbrother to the ACC when it comes to football. They're going to be a full-fledged conference member this year. Notre Dame will play a 10-game ACC schedule, including a huge game against Clemson. And they are going to be eligible to win the conference, to play in the conference title game, and to take the conference's spot in the Orange Bowl if they have a good enough season to do so. That is a at least in my corner of the world, that's big news. For the first time in forever, Notre Dame is not an independent for a season.
You've got a chance at winning a conference title?
Yeah.
Look at that.
For a year.
How's that feel? How's that feel?
I kind of like our independence, if you want to know the truth. You know?
Yeah, do you really?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Well, no, here's why. And I'm not this is not a looking down on the rest of college football thing.
Sounds like it's going to be.
It's not.
This sounds a little bit like, not to be racist, but, you know.
It's not that at all.
Where you know you're damn well about to hear a racist thing.
It's not that at all.
Okay.
Hey, let me finish.
Not to be a conferencist, but.
I'm a conferencist. I looked at Notre Dame's schedule that they're going to play this year now, and I go, yeah, I mean, it's all right. I mean, it's a lot of it's all ACC stuff. And the ACC, other than Clemson, ain't the sexiest conference. Like, okay, well, they got Florida State, who's not that good anymore. They've got, you know, the BC is in there, and Wake Forest, and North Carolina. The one great thing about being an independent is you play a schedule where there's a lot of cool games on it. Notre Dame was supposed to play USC and Stanford this year. They were supposed to play Wisconsin in Lambeau Field. They were supposed to play Navy in Ireland to open the season. That's always been the cool thing about Notre Dame's independence for me as a fan and as an alumni of the school, is the schedule is different every year. Like, there are some of the same opponents that you play each year because of rivalries, but by and large, 8 or 9 of the 12 or 13 games every year are different. They're fun. A lot of them are big names. That part goes away this year. You're playing an ACC schedule, and I'm not that jazzed. I'll be jazzed up if we get any college football, don't get me wrong, but just in terms of why I like the independents better than being in a conference.
I think if you actually spent like 5 years in a conference, Sean, you would actually learn to just enjoy the familiarity of it all.
Maybe.
The certain rhythm to it, the tradition and the ritual. Versus when you're out there on your own, you know, it's good for a young man. Maybe, you know, you're 21, 22 years old. Go out and sow your oats. But at some point, you want some familiarity. And Notre Dame has been out there, like, frankly, for far too long. And I think maybe now when you get a taste of this, you'll start to like and appreciate it. I don't know where you'll end up and land eventually. I do look forward to telling Deshaun what you said about the ACC. But other than that, I think that I think you're going to like it. I think you're going to enjoy it.
I did give props to Clemson, saying that was a big game coming up this year for them. It's the rest of the ACC that it's kind of.
Joe Kelly Instagram was that was not his Instagram.
That was not his Instagram. Okay, good. Yeah. I'm glad we looked that up. Okay, thank you. So I'll say this just real quick. Let me just say you're listening to KILT and KILT HD2, a radio.com station. If it were the Big Ten, you can take the music down, Ben. If it were the Big Ten that Notre Dame were going to for a season, I would be pretty fired up about that. Because you're talking about, first of all, the rivalries are more regional. Like, Notre Dame always feels like an outlier playing all these schools in the Carolinas and in Florida and Georgia and South Carolina places, Virginia, places like that. And here's Notre Dame sitting out there in the middle of Indiana. Much more Midwest, obviously, than East Coast like the ACC is. But you'd get Ohio State. You'd get Penn State. You already play Michigan and Michigan State most seasons. Purdue is in there, so that's a bit of a regional rivalry. Nebraska would be in there. Wisconsin would be in there. I would agree with your take that I would be more fired up about the season year in and year out if they were playing that schedule as opposed to an ACC schedule.
This is more of a short-term thing because styles change and teams change and schemes change. But there's part of me that would be intrigued by Notre Dame going into the Big 12 just because you'd be one of the few more conventionally constructed teams with a certain level of talent, you know, that maybe could there be a mismatch in certain position groups and areas just because they're constructed differently. You might have an advantage there, but over time I wonder what it would end up doing.
Yeah, I don't know. They've played some Big 12 opponents through the years. I mean, they went to Norman and beat Oklahoma a few years back. That would be interesting. That would be fun for me living in Texas to get them to come down here a couple times.
Oh boy! Plus, and all these Texas schools would just absolutely love beating up on Notre Dame, Sean.
Yeah, they
hypothetically, if they did.
I think everybody loves to loves to kick them in the junk.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, you get. Does that ever get old? I guess you as a Notre Dame grad have a little bit of experience with what the Astros are going through right now, in that. People hate you, like, just because you're Notre Dame. Are there times where you feel like it's an injustice? Just like, hey, come on, man. We never did anything to anybody. Why you got to hate us on so much?
I'll tell you where it manifests itself. This is where it gets frustrating, is that I think sometimes people think that because they're Notre Dame, they get the benefit of the doubt in the rankings. You know what I mean? That somehow... the voters who are in the AP poll are all media members who probably all hate Notre Dame too. Mm-hmm. That somehow that there's been some preferential treatment through the years in the polls and stuff like that, which if you go look at it, if you go back and look at it, it's absolutely not the case. And so I think that part is a little bit frustrating. I think the part where people don't realize that some of the benefit of the doubt that Notre Dame does get on some things, like being part of the college football playoff, even though they're not part of a conference, is because they're good for business. You know, when it was announced a few weeks ago that a lot of these conferences were going to start getting rid of their non-conference games, you know, Pac-12, Big Ten, well, there went a big chunk of Notre Dame's schedule because they play a couple Pac-12 teams, they play a couple Big Ten teams. And I saw, I think it was Landry's the one I'll point out. He was not the only one, but I'll point Landry out because he was the one who I saw tweeted. He's like, along the lines of what you're saying, Seth, he's not a Notre Dame fan. So he goes, man, it would be so funny if Notre Dame wound up on the outside looking in, not having a schedule this year, you know, because they're an independent. And my reply to that was these 5x5 conferences would all be falling over themselves to get Notre Dame in for 1 year. The other four conferences would kill to have what the ACC just got, which is to have Notre Dame in their conference for a year. Notre Dame, by the way, is splitting all of their TV money with the conference this year, including their NBC money for the home games, which they usually do not split with anybody. They are splitting that money with the conference. So I think that's the part that's frustrating is, one, they don't get nearly the preferential treatment in the polls that people think. Two, when they maybe do get some preferential treatment, like being allowed to be part of the football, the playoff tapestry without being in a conference, it's for good reason. They bring money to the table, you know?
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.